Today's sponsor is the Raw Juice Company. So the Raw Juice Company has cold pressed juices, and I have sent these to clients. I've ordered them myself. They're absolutely gorgeous. So their method of juicing is fantastically nutrient rich. It's natural, it's raw, it's cold pressed, it's whole food, and it's vibrant juice. So everything from their labels to the bottles are produced in Ireland. And I love what they do, that the pulp from the juices is turned into animal feed and given to a local farmer. So they're so passionate about what they do. And it's such an honor to have them as a sponsor. Now, they've given us a code, which is KDPOD10, if you want to get 10% off your juice. Now, these are limited and it is time sensitive. So I suggest you go to www.raw.ie and taste them for yourself. Thank you for being our sponsor today. Patrick McKeown, you are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. How's it going?
Good, Karen. Well, it's good. Enjoying the sunshine.
I know. I know. It makes a difference right now.
Yeah, for sure. Ireland's a great place to be if the weather was a bit better, you know. You kind of appreciate it after a couple of weeks of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, best country in the world.
Yeah,
totally. Patrick, for the sake of everyone watching, why don't you introduce yourself? And I'd love to hear what got you into the breathing cure.
Yeah, I suppose like many kids here in Ireland, I was growing up with asthma and I had a stuffy nose. And if you have a stuffy nose, you're very much likely to have sleep problems. You're 2 to 3 times more likely. So I was waking up tired every morning and I remember going through school and into my secondary school as well. I had a couple of hospitalizations for asthma. I left school at 14, never to go back again, never wanted to go back because I hated school. And I absolutely hated school because of poor concentration, a racing mind. Because as a mouth breathing kid, you're very much in a fight or flight response, and also with poor sleep. And we're demanded to be able to sit down for 5 or 6 or 7 hours, you know, to be able to concentrate. And I had no concentration. And I went to a school in Declan's in Cabarrus, St. Declan's in Cabarrus on the Neffin Road there. And I remember my maths teacher there saying that I'd be better off picking potatoes out in the field than attending his class because I had a habit of falling asleep. Now, the first time I spoke about this was when I wrote a recent book. It just went to print this morning called Atomic Focus. And it's about focus and it's about concentration and attention span, because these are traits that are so essential to every walk of life, but are never discussed. And our education is not doing it. Our education is teaching us how to think, but not teaching us how to stop thinking. And so many kids are leaving school without the ability to have any capacity of control over their thought processes. So we really have to delve into this. And so in any event, I left school at 14 and I was working to be a trainee shop manager. I grew up in a town in Dunboyne, County Meath. And at 15, the shop sold, but I was too young to be taken on by the new employers. And I decided to go back to school. So I'm back to Declan's, and then I had a notion that I wanted to get into Trinity College, and that was my dream. So I worked, and I worked pretty hard, and I studied 10 and 12 hours a day despite poor concentration, and I got the points for BESS. This was back in 1991.
This is Economics and Social Studies.
That's the one. I did that course, and I attended TCD from 1992 to 1997 or 96. And then I went into the corporate world, absolutely hated it. I worked for a company called Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I was one of their first Irish employees bringing their opening branches here in Ireland. And that's why I moved from Dublin to Galway, because I opened the branch here in Galway and I met an Irish woman, a Galway woman. That was it. That's the end of that story. But I hated the corporate world from the point of view of the pressures put on people, the lack of creativity, the lack of independence, that almost that you're owned and you're molded and shaped and milked and worked. And we were worked, I'd say 10 hours a day was the standard, you know, and on call then at weekends, and being fed this kind of, you know, people can sell things very nicely to you, very much in the corporate and the business world. People, intelligent people can have a very great way of a deception, I would call it. And presenting something and flowering it up, and ultimately it's about getting the most out of you and possibly screwing you. So I read a newspaper article about the importance of nose breathing and breathing light and started putting it into practice. And I started bringing my attention onto my breath very much. And I have to say, it totally changed my life. It completely changed my life. I wore tape on my mouth during sleep, and I taped up my mouth to force myself to breathe through my nose. And within a couple of days, I was waking up feeling alert. I'd never experienced that. My state of calmness was gently and gradually improving. I did have a racing mind, and that's probably why I hated the corporate world so much. So I'm not going to blame totally any company, but my state of physiology was very much in a fight or flight response. And if you're stuck in that state of fight or flight and poor sleep, it doesn't take much to tip you over the edge.
Yeah.
It's not always the situation, but it's our reaction to that situation. And it's our physiology too.
Brilliant. Patrick, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
It's so brilliantly put, and thanks for sharing that. I quite often get phone calls from people in hospital that have just been diagnosed. And they ring me and they say, oh, the first question usually is, what did you do? Can you tell me? And the second is usually about food, because it seems to be the easiest thing, because you can see it. You can physically do something about it, and you can see what you're doing. Whereas you can't necessarily see your breath. And for me, you know, treating a person, and you've brought it up beautifully, you know, particularly around the education system, and this is worldwide, not just Ireland, unfortunately, is that we're not giving people the capacity to actually manage their existence of themselves.
Sure.
You know, we might be teaching them, you know, maths and geography and science, and that's great, but it's not the learning that we need to survive ourselves and to deal with life in itself. So tell me, if you had somebody that is in that fight or flight response, you know, you are in that mode where you cannot really concentrate on anything else. And it can be a bit of a panic to even just slow down and breathe. What would you say to somebody that is right there in that moment, you know, on a maybe a continuous cycle of a few days of, I've just been diagnosed with something and I need something to do? What would you say to someone like that that's in that state?
The first thing that I would say to them is don't take the deep breaths that people commonly tell you to do when you're stressed, because it's absolutely the worst thing to do if it causes you to breathe more air. It's going to reduce blood flow to the brain. It's a big breath. It's a chest breath, and it's more likely to activate a fight or flight response as opposed to a relaxation response. Anytime that we want to relax the body and mind, you have to think of the exhalation, and it's always about slowing down the exhalation. And if you can slow down the exhalation and extend the exhalation, you have to stimulate the vagus nerve, which secretes the neurotransmitter acetylcholine, which causes a slowing of the heart. And the brain will interpret the slowing of the heart that the body is safe. And the brain then is signaling to the body on the basis of that. For people who have quite, say, hyperventilation or panic disorder, it's very difficult for them to slow down their breath. So instead, we do breath holds. And we've used this with the most extreme cases of anxiety and people who have gone through horrific life circumstances. And we would have them do small breath holds many times throughout the day. Mindfulness doesn't work for the very group of people who need it the most. If your mind is racing and if you're in a state of emotional trauma, the last thing you want to do is focus on your breath. All it's going to do is amplify your thoughts, and you'll get frustrated in the process. If you want to calm down, there's a couple of different ways to do it. The first exercise would be is to take a normal breath in through your nose and out through your nose and pinch your nose and hold your nose for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let go. Breathe in through your nose and breathe normal for 10 seconds. And then again, take a normal breath in through your nose and out through your nose and pinch your nose and hold. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let go. Breathe in through your nose and breathe normal for 10 seconds. 5 seconds might even be too much for some people, because if they have a fast respiratory rate and they're breathing up their chest, it's likely that they feel air hunger. So if they hold their breath for 5 seconds, it can cause destabilization of their breathing. So we typically then might have them do it for 3 seconds. So we would practice that exercise for 3 seconds and 4 seconds and 5 seconds. Because if you extend, if you have a normal exhalation and then a breath hold, you stimulate the vagus nerve. So with that exercise, you're helping to calm the central nervous system, which includes the brain, but without having to focus on your breath and without having to focus on the mind. And that's where it starts. And it actually, you can go one step further. The person who is in that state of panic or anxiety, how is their everyday breathing? It's like me in the corporate world. My everyday breathing was fast and shallow and mouth breathing. And of course, the slightest of a situation would put you into that stress response. If you improve your everyday breathing patterns, you improve your resilience. And objectively, this is measured via heart rate variability. So small breath holds is one way to do it. Another way to increase blood flow to the brain would be take a normal breath in through your nose, out through your nose, pinch your nose and hold your nose, and walk for about 5 to 10 paces across the room and then let go and breathe in through your nose. Because when you hold your breath like that, it's a very gentle breath hold. You're extending the exhalation, but you're also increasing carbon dioxide in the blood. And by increasing carbon dioxide in the blood, it helps to improve blood flow to the brain. We need to turn upside down the current thinking about breathing. We should never hear our breathing during rest. It's not about taking full big breaths. It's about breathing light, breathing slow, breathing deep. And the foundation to that is breathing in and out through the nose. Like, here's the harmful effects of poor breathing. I was doing an exam in TCD, 1996. I was just walking into the exam hall, anxious going in. It was one of the final exams. I took a walk for about 2 to 3 minutes because I wanted to clear my head. And I was after reading this book about the importance of taking these full big breaths that you hear in studios all over the place. I went for a walk for 2 to 3 minutes and I took these full big breaths. And I walked into that exam hall and I can still remember walking in and I was spaced out and I was lightheaded. I had deprived my brain of blood flow and oxygen. There are people teaching breathing exercises that have no idea what they're talking about. They're putting false information out there. They're doing it unknowingly. They're not doing it intentionally. If you're talking about breathing, you need to understand the physiology and also to be able to tailor breathing exercise to the state of that individual. Like, I've made loads of mistakes with breathing. I've put people into panic attacks. I've put people into trauma. I've had one guy, I've put him into accidents and emergency by breathing exercises. Breathing is pretty powerful. And one thing that 20 years of doing is, sorry, I have two dogs barking in the back.
I have two kids in the background. You have two dogs, right. You know.
Well, there's three dogs out there, but the one thing about breathing is that it's powerful and we have to respect it. And, you know, to look at breathing from a number of different perspectives, from a biochemical point of view, a biomechanical point of view, and resonance frequency point of view. And also that there are exercises to stress the body and mind, and there's also exercise to relax the body and mind. If I was to say, what's the foundation is deep sleep. We will never have recovery of anything unless we get our sleep quality right. And I wrote a paper with two ear, nose and throat doctors that was published in the Journal of Clinical Medicine about 3 months ago. I had undiagnosed sleep apnea. Nobody told me about it. Nobody presented it to me. I was in university and student. I did an Erasmus program with TCL in Uppsala in 95 or 94. And I was staying in student dorms and the students told me that I was stopping breathing during sleep. I had no idea what it was, but I was exhausted. You know, you can imagine, like, I'm not unique. There are hundreds of thousands of people in this country in that same situation. Their sleep is lousy. Their breathing is lousy. And yet society is demanding that they can cope. And that they can do everything. We have to get back to basics here. You know, it really is important.
Because, you know what, I think that, you know, the wider cost of that is, you know, if you have a couple in a bed and one of them had sleep apnea, you then end up getting probably annoyed with each other, maybe staying in separate rooms, could be a relationship breakdown, lack of sleep, that then could lead to illness or loss of job or fractured relationships. So the cost is actually really big and we don't necessarily see it.
Yeah,
and it's down to breathing.
It's a huge role to play in it. You know, I'm not going to say that this is a cure-all or anything like that, but this is, if you have your mouth open during sleep, you're not likely to wake up feeling alert and your sleep is more likely to be lighter. I wrote about it in the book that you were reading there. I remember a woman coming in here to Galway, I don't know, a few years ago. She had depression for many years. And just in conversation, I asked her, I said, how do you feel when you wake up in the morning? And she says she wakes up feeling absolutely exhausted. And I said, has any healthcare professional ever asked you about your sleep quality? And she said, no. Now, here's a woman with depression, and it's very likely that this woman had obstructive sleep apnea. She fit the bill. She was just a little bit overweight. And if you're overweight, it increases the risk. And it's normal to be overweight when you have sleep apnea because it messes up with hormones, including ghrelin, and you eat more food. Most healthcare professionals will say that this woman has exhaustion because of the depression. Now, if you have sleep apnea and insomnia, your risk of depression is much higher. And you are supposed to cope with all of the challenges of daily life in a state of, you know, brain fog and a state of fatigue, which is going to drive up anxiety. And chronic anxiety is going to contribute to depression.
Mm-hmm.
The healthcare professional needs to get out of their box and to need to look at that there can be, in the human body, there can be bidirectional relationships, that we are not one body split up into separate pieces. That whatever it can be going on with one function can influence another and vice versa. And many people who are not well, they breathe hard and fast. And hard and fast breathing is also tipping you into that fight or flight response, and it impacts your sleep. And this can make recovery difficult. Because if you think about it through the breath, we can influence 70,000 miles of blood vessels throughout the body by changing our breathing patterns. But we can also increase oxygen release to the tissues. We can strengthen the baroreflex, which is the autonomic nervous system, and we can help the body to recover. Now, I'm not saying, of course, all conditions, but I'm saying that it's a very important tool. Like, I was breathing light back in 97, 98 or whatever, 99, after reading that newspaper article. And I, for the first time, I started to feel my hands were getting warm. I breathed less air to the point of air hunger, and my hands became warm. And you know, it's very common for people with poor breathing patterns to have cold hands and feet. All the information that seems to be out there is that the more air you breathe, the better it is for you. And yet, when I was breathing less air, I was able to influence my oxygen delivery. I was able to experience increased watery saliva in the mouth, which is an indicator that you're putting the body into that relaxation response. I was able to improve my blood circulation. And sometimes, Karen, if you think of yoga instructors, have an enormous potential to transform lives. And I mean to transform millions of lives. Mm-hmm. But they don't understand about breathing. And I'm talking about, in some of them, that gets their backs up, but they don't. They don't understand how blood flow and carbon dioxide and oxygen, how about it's a balance between CO2 and O2, the Bohr effect. And the Bohr effect was something that was discovered back in 1904 by a Danish physiologist called Christian Bohr. He said, the pressure of carbon dioxide in the blood is a key or a catalyst for red blood cells to release oxygen to the tissues. So in other words, hemoglobin, which is the carrier of oxygen in the blood, releases oxygen in the presence of carbon dioxide. Now, how many times have we heard, breathe in as much oxygen as you can and get rid of that toxic carbon dioxide. And by getting rid of that toxic carbon dioxide, hemoglobin holds onto oxygen more readily and it deprives the body of oxygen. If I was a 15-year-old going into a yoga practice, Patrick, breathe through your nose in and out. Don't be having your mouth open. Breathe light and we'll improve your blood circulation. Do breath holds. We'll open up your airways. Slow down your breathing. We'll change your autonomic nervous state. We'll change your life. And I want you to bring this breathing practice off the mat into your everyday life. It's not happened. Instead, a few ideas. Take full big breaths for some instructors. Breathe out through the mouth. And forget about your breathing off the mat. Yeah. And yoga has the potential to make an enormous difference.
That's so brilliant that you say that, Patrick, because it really does bring us back to realizing and slowing down ourselves to give ourselves the opportunity to realize the influence that we have on our own body. And a lot of the times I believe that we put that autonomy over there with somebody else. And the medical doctors, I'm not trying to medically bash in any way, shape or form, because they do great jobs, particularly at acute medicine and when we really need it. However, we're forgetting the basics that we have as human beings, and we're putting it out there into the form of medicine or pills or fix me, rather than giving ourselves the respect and the honor to really look at what we can do for ourselves. So it's such a joy to hear you say that and to really want to ignite that in others. And one question that I'd love to ask, and I know certainly a lot of my clients experience it, is, you know, we spend a lot of time looking for solutions and there is an overload of information on the internet. And it's really hard to decipher, what do I listen to or where, what voice do I go to? And a lot of the times it's whoever shouts the loudest. And unfortunately, some of the time it's, you know, the empty vessels make the most noise, rather than actually going back to people that have really honed in their practice. And it was so lovely to hear you say, you have made mistakes, because we all do. And that's how we learn. You know, you fail and you fail fast and you learn by each of those things. So, but what would you say to somebody that is out there searching, you know, particularly for somebody that's dealing with an autoimmune or a chronic illness that potentially has very little energy, is dealing with brain fog and lack of ability to focus and have that clarity, probably an inability to really commit to consistency on a practice and probably other people to look after too. What would you say to somebody like that? And I know you've mentioned, but if there was one particular exercise, what might that be?
I'd probably start off with the small breath hold exercises, as I do with most people who come in who are chronically unwell, including people with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. I think it's a very gentle approach to start off with and to gently expose the body and the mind to stronger exercises over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The key to motivating somebody is that they get something out of it. But the reason that I kept on with breathing was because I was able to unblock my nose and I could feel the temperature of my hands change. And also my wheezing, which I had for about wheezing with chest tightness and constriction of the airways, it reduced by about 50% in that first week. I knew then I was onto something, and that was about breathing less. So the best way to find out if something is suitable for you is that you should feel a difference doing it. And you should feel a difference relatively quickly. And you can do that with the breath. If you're doing hyperventilation, say if somebody is chronically unwell, I would say do not do hyperventilation and long breath holds. You need to recover. You don't need to stretch your body even more. I would also look at how can you improve your sleep quality and downregulate before 15 minutes before sleep, and especially nose breathe. Don't have your mouth open. Don't wake up with a dry mouth in the morning. You could practice a very simple exercise to downregulate before sleep. You could be just sitting there, one hand on your chest, one hand just above your navel, tuning into the airflow coming in and out of your nose, and really slowing down the speed of the breath as it enters and leaves the nostrils. And don't worry about breathing high or low. Only focus on slowing down the speed of your breath as it comes in and out of the nose and breathe a little bit less air, maybe 20%, 30% less air. Feel air hunger and don't do it to the point of stress. If you get a little bit stressed, take a rest and then go back to it. As you focus your attention on your breath and you're slowing down the speed of your breathing and you're having a very relaxed and slow breath out, it has a calming effect on the central nervous system. By breathing a little bit less air, you're increasing carbon dioxide in the blood. This helps to increase blood flow and oxygen delivery to the brain, which also has a calming effect. The brain, by regulating its own breathing, regulates its own excitability. Nerve cells become excitable if we hyperventilate. And if we hyperventilate, it lowers pain thresholds and it increases pain perception. If we are in pain, it is normal that we hyperventilate in response to the pain. But if we hyperventilate, it exaggerates the feeling of pain. So it's very important, and there's been a number of studies on this. And also, you know, when we're talking about fibromyalgia, we need to take into consideration hormonal changes in females. Again, something that has been overlooked in the breath world since 1915, it's noted that. So women who are young women going through, say, the monthly cycle, post-ovulation, and its mid-luteal phase, that there's an increase in hormones, progesterone and estrogen, and progesterone is a respiratory stimulant. So breathing becomes harder and faster during that time, and that causes carbon dioxide levels to drop by as much as 25%. That can bring on a feeling of air hunger, a little bit of panic, a little bit of anxiety, increased pain, headaches, fatigue. The symptoms of PMS are attributable to the changes in breathing brought about by the changes of hormones. Now, very little research, unfortunately. I think there's enough research on it, though, and the female has nothing to lose. And the individual has nothing to lose by gently slowing down and softening the breath. At the very least, you're bringing your attention out of the mind and into your body and onto your breath. And you're giving yourself some attention. But think about how healthy people breathe. Healthy people breathe in and out through their nose. Healthy people breathe light. They don't have hard breathing. Healthy people breathe slow. They don't have a fast respiratory rate of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 breaths per minute. And healthy people breathe low. So it's light, slow, and deep. The acronym there you could use is LSD, or you could use nose, slow, and low. When people are sick, when people are anxious, when people have panic disorder, when people have asthma, when people have different health conditions, look at their breathing patterns. And their breathing is not nose, slow, and low. Their breathing is often a little bit upper chest, a little bit faster, and this is feeding back into the cycle. So it's through the breath that we can influence the autonomic nervous system. And there's sufficient research in this over the last 30 years in terms of strengthening the baroreflex, which is the pressure receptors inside the major blood vessels, making them more sensitive to changes in blood pressure. And by doing that, it influences vagal tone. And we need our vagus nerve to be reactive, because this then is a marker of resilience, that we can cope with the stresses of daily life. Mm. We cannot cope if we're in a switched on all the time state. This idea of a culture and society, and I liked your point about the extroverts. I'm an introvert, and introverts typically bring their attention inwards. we don't get to become leaders in different companies, because it's normally, I think I put it in the new book, 76% of all positions in companies are filled by extroverts. So extroverts are the big mouths, the people who jump into decisions without thinking them out. Our whole economic collapse in 2008 was fueled by extroverts. Males, ego-dominated risk takers. We should have had a few introverts in there to bring a bit of balance. And if you are an introvert, celebrate it, because I would much rather to be an introvert than an extrovert. Now, of course, this isn't the knock of extroverts, but what I'm doing is introverts have always been left out by society. It's time that we recognize the power of the introvert. I don't like crowded places. I'm not going to be the guy who's going to walk a room. I'll sit in the corner, maybe talk to one person. I find that excessive talking drains me of energy, whereas extroverts get energized by it. Politicians are extroverts. That's what they are. And again, we do need that balance there. We need the female balance and we need the introvert balance. And this idea of about the loud mouth getting all the attention, it is correct, but we have to step back in that. So coming back anyway, like, I suppose, Karen, bringing attention out of the mind and onto the breath is a wonderful thing to do. And we can often feel guilty about doing it in Western society because it's all about doing, doing and doing. But it's one of the best things that ever we can do.
I completely agree with you, and such a valid, valid point. Tell me this, if somebody is busy and they're dealing with a lot of stuff during their day and they want to and they have an interest and they can see the benefit breathing slow and low and through their nose. I got that order wrong, by the way. What would you say could be a good little trigger for them to remember to bring their attention back a little bit so that they don't forget?
I suppose one thing I would do is say to everybody, never wake up with a dry mouth in the morning. Because if you have your mouth open during sleep, your sleep is lighter. Mm-hmm. You're more prone to snoring and obstructive sleep apnea. And, if you have snoring and sleep apnea, you're not going to be concentrated and fully resilient the following day. So get your sleep right. Now, we tape them out and I can show
I've
you.
I've seen them. Do you have one of them? Because I've seen them.
Yeah. It's very attractive. It's a tape that surrounds the mouth. Now, when I was doing this in the years gone by, we were using 3M 1-inch micropore tape. But this tape here is called myotape because it was developed for children attending orthodontists, because children who mouth breathe develop crooked teeth. All mouth breathing kids develop crooked teeth. Mm-hmm. So we stretch the tape and we press it to the mouth, around the mouth. So it's surrounding the lips, but because it's elasticated, it's pulling the lips inwards. So we're able to achieve nasal breathing, but without risk. And it's suitable, of course, then with kids over 5 years of age, once they can functionally breathe through the nose, with adults, with people who are a bit apprehensive, etc. There's plenty of times throughout our day that we have even a break for 1 or 2 minutes. Even if you're sitting in a meeting, you don't have to surrender all of your attention to the meeting. In actual fact, many people are sitting in meetings, especially with Zoom, and they're not even listening to the meeting. Their attention is stuck in their head anyway. Mm-hmm. So while you're at your meeting, bring some of your attention inwards. It's always about conservation of energy. If we have too many decisions and we're wasting our attention and wasting our energy unnecessarily on being lost in thought, we're going to be tired. The more you can conserve your energy, the more likely then your decisions are better. You could, for example, at the start, I would say is set aside 5 and 10 minutes and bring your attention inwards and practice breathing less air. So we typically work, when I'm giving a workshop, I'll focus on breathing nose first and show people how to open up their nose. Because if their nose is stuffy, or even if they have hay fever, their sleep is affected. So then they're tired. So people with nasal congestion are tired. We have to get their nose open. The more you can breathe through the nose, the better the nose works. Then we practice on exercises to de-stress. Small breath holds or very slow, gentle exhalations. Or we can have a normal breath in through the nose, a slow exhalation to functional residual capacity, but then continue to exhale to get the diaphragm back up to its resting position. Then we look at the biomechanics. So to activate and engage the diaphragm, we use a belt called the Buteyko belt. But we also have other exercise, breathe in and out through your nose, hold your nose. And as you hold your breath, try and breathe in and out through your nose. So you get contractions of the diaphragm, lateral expansion, contraction of the lower ribs, lowering in the back, lowering in the front, different techniques. And then we would do slow breathing as well and bring them together for people. But I suppose the best exercise that you do is the exercise that you do, and make a concerted effort of breathing through the nose. And even if it's just for 90 seconds, take a soft breath in through your nose and have a very slow and prolonged and relaxed exhalation. And that will bring the body and mind into relaxation. Always think of, if you breathe out fast, it's a stressor. And if you breathe out slow, it's a relaxer.
That's really, really brilliant. Joe, I have one final question for you, because I think you brought up something similar, and I think it's really good for humanity to hear this. You mentioned about, you know, making mistakes. What is the biggest, or what's the mistake that you made that turned into something that you became grateful for?
Yeah, I suppose there's one thing that, if I was to say that I'm most grateful for, I am so fortunate to have a job that really suited my skill set. I love the job, absolutely love it. And I failed science in the intercept, by the way, which is bizarre. And that can be, I'm sure if you were to see my intercept results, I failed science. So my education didn't do much for me, I have to say. I don't have very much faith in the people who are working with me. And I really feel that there's a huge shortfall in that. But I was driving from Galway to Navan. And in that journey, it was about 3 hours at the time. There was no motorway. This has gone back into the late 1990s. And I got this gut feeling that I needed to be teaching breathing. And I made the decision that weekend that I was packing in Enterprise Rent-A-Car, packing it in, and I was going to work. And I was leaving that occupation, going into an occupation I knew absolutely nothing about, leaving a company car. I had no capital starting off. I had no money. I was living in my now wife's front room of her parents' house for 1 year, sleeping on the sofa. And it was a good feeling that it was the right thing to do. And even if it didn't work out, it would have been the best experiences. And I learned more in that year. And thankfully it worked out. And I have to say that life, I've been very, very lucky, and things have very much fallen into place. You know, it has been really kind of an amazing journey. We've 700 instructors throughout the world. What? We're in 50 countries. Nobody knows this in Ireland. 95% of my work is outside of the country. Like just before our podcast here, I had a podcast with Pete, who's a celebrity chef in Australia. He would have been a household name, because once I mentioned him to my wife, she knew him. And like, I'm working with Navy SEALs, Special Weapons and Tactics. I'm working with the Royal Air Force. We're doing quite a few sessions with them come in September, October.
Brilliant.
And it's really been an amazing journey, you know. So yeah, and I wrote about all of this. The book that went to print this morning, Atomic Focus is the name of it. I put a lot of the personal stuff into it, and the stuff that I would have loved to have came across when I was 20 years of age, because it can be a tough time. You know, there's something lovely about your 30s, because you're kind of a little bit more comfortable with life, and your 40s, you're comfortable with life, and you become more comfortable as well. You don't really care what people think to some extent. But when you're in your early 20s and your teenage years, you're so obsessed with what people are thinking and how are they judging you. And it's a dreadful place to be, because you're living your life according to other people's thoughts. And there's a lot of pressure on young kids. You know, there really is. And the whole points race here in this country, which is a total joke. You know, there's just so many things that, regardless of the circumstances in your life, the one solace that you have is, you can influence your states by changing your breath. And what has held breathing back is that it has been, you have the medical doctor on this side who wants all science. The medical doctor is not interested in breathing. Most of them, some of them are, but most of them are not. You have the person who's teaching breathing on this side who's teaching all woo-woo. And that's put a bad slant in it too, because we need the people in the middle, and we need breathing for the people. And for people, and especially men, because when I was giving talks here, 2010 to 2013, I was giving small talks throughout the country, Cork, Dublin, Limerick, Galway. And I had 30 people coming into a class. There were 2-hour sessions. And I was bringing together mindfulness with functional breathing, because there was a lot of anxiety here at the time. 90 to 95% of the talks were attended by females. Very few men would attend. And I was thinking to myself, how can we reach out to the male population? That's why it's still a oxygen advantage. And we have our MMA fighter, Georgie, who's one of our instructors in the front, and his muscles. And because these guys are using it. And that's where we need to take the breath. And we need all walks of life to realize that you have this resource that doesn't cost you money. Granted, a book might be $15 or 15 euro. You get everything in it. Everything. You know, it costs you very little money. And you have a tremendous resource. And I'm going to say this. The breath has been overlooked in mental health, and so has sleep. 75% of the population with anxiety and panic disorder have dysfunctional breathing. 75%. Not my thoughts. That's according to the literature. How many people in Ireland do we have suffering with mental health issues? Cognitive behavioral therapy does not change respiratory physiology. Mindfulness is not going to work with this group of people, because when your mind is in that state of emotional turmoil, the last thing you want to do is focus on your mind, or even focus just on your breath. We need to alter the breath. We need to alter the breath, even by doing small breath holds or slow exhalations, but not necessarily focusing on the breath, but changing breathing patterns to calm the central nervous system. Because when we calm the central nervous system and improve sleep, now the mind is more receptive to CBT, but it's been overlooked. So you have so many individuals that are literally drowning in thought, that our education system has taught them how to teach, but hasn't taught them how to stop thinking, hasn't taught them how to switch off, hasn't taught them how to differentiate a productive thought versus a negative thought and a self-harming thought, that there is no awareness brought into the education system. The education system is absolutely, it's primitive to the degree that it's causing harm, and it's not doing the job that it should be doing. But so is our mental health system. And psychotherapy needs to approach mental health and psychology and psychiatry and start looking at breathing from a functional point of view, and also start looking at sleep. They haven't, and there's been resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been, I'll give you an example. And I have no problem now talking about, I'll give you an example with my own history of asthma. And I had years and decades of asthma. I had 3 hospitalizations. When I came across this by accident, by reading it in a newspaper article, it made an enormous difference to my asthma. Breathing through my nose, something so simple, breathing light and breathing slow. And I phoned the Asthma Society of Ireland. I said, could you really investigate this? And I met with them, and kind of listening to me, but not really caring so much about it. And I remember going to an asthma conference, and the CEO at the time, this is back in 2005, sat down beside me. She sat down beside me at the asthma conference, and she said, Patrick, she says, don't ask any questions at this conference. That's the reason that she sat down beside me, to silence me. Now, the only reason that I'm putting that out there is, and that's, I'm not making this up, because I've no vested interest in making anything up. And it sounds, my podcast so far has been about very negative. I just want to kind of show a perspective that people often have their own agendas, and they don't want breathwork to be put out there. You don't kind of dismiss breathing because your healthcare professional hasn't told you about it. Your healthcare professional can very much have their own motives. And they're oftentimes, I feel that we as human beings, we're very resilient, we're very resistant to change. We don't want to change. And we have to start embracing change if we're going to make some progress. So for the person who's listening to this, just because nobody has told you about changing your breathing patterns, start doing it, because it could be the very thing that could help you a lot.
I couldn't agree more, Patrick. Do you know what it is? Something that really most of the human race, we don't think about unless it's somebody being born or someone dying.
Yes.
The only 2 times a lot of the time that people think about their breath. And it is a magic wand inside of us that we have so much power over that we do just forget. So it's so refreshing to hear you say that. And look, I can relate to, you know, the industry not necessarily talking about it. And I believe probably, and this is going to sound really cynical, because there's not a lot of money to be made out of it.
Well, I think that's the reason. I had a podcast with James Nestor going back about 4 months ago, and we had Dr. John Mew, we had Mike Mew, we had Kevin Boyd, we had pretty big hitters in the industry. And that came up in conversation. And I said, that was the point. I said, the reason that breathing has not been embraced is because there is no money to be made from it. And if this promised profit, you can imagine the amount of people that would be getting behind it. But it's a very sad indictment of our health system, which is supposed to be there to care for people, you know, and even it has relevance even in COVID, because if you breathe in and out through your nose harnesses a gas called nasal nitric oxide, which is antiviral and antibacterial. And there's even an inhaler that has undergone clinical trials in the United Kingdom called Sanotize. And it's a nitric oxide inhaler. And it's been shown to help speed up recovery of people infected with COVID. Now, your nose has its own natural resource of nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a bronchodilator. It opens up the blood vessels in the lungs. It improves oxygen transfer from the lungs to the blood by about 10%. Yet we're not hearing about it, even breathing in a breathing pandemic. I put these exercises onto YouTube back in March of 2020, just at the very initial stages of the pandemic. I did a 1 hour Zoom, but it was oversubscribed. So I got the recording. It's very poorly done. The lighting is bad. Everything is bad. Put it up there. It's had about 900,000 views. You'll see a few different thousand comments, people who have been using breathing exercises to help with their COVID. And you know what? I think even that we have to bear in mind. And there's another thing is as well, how to breathe while wearing the mask. Because if you put a mask on somebody's face, especially a child or a teenager or an adult with anxiety or asthma or dysfunctional breathing patterns, when they wear a mask, it pools carbon dioxide, which is fine. The pooling of carbon dioxide is fine. But pooling of carbon dioxide generates a feeling of suffocation or air hunger. And if the person has a tendency towards panic or anxiety, they may react to the feeling of air hunger by breathing fast and shallow. And that fast and shallow breathing is going to tip them into that fight or flight response, which is going to generate and increase their anxiety. So number one is we should have been told, wash your hands, wear a mask, if that's the way it is, but breathe through your nose and only breathe through your nose, and especially breathe through your nose if you're infected, because if you're infected with COVID, it's a respiratory issue. You're going to feel air hunger. You're more likely to mouth breathe. And by mouth breathing, there's a 42% greater water loss going out to the mouth. So in an enclosed environment, it increases the risk of transmission. But again, it was overlooked. So I would say to people, if you are feeling uncomfortable wearing the masks, make sure that you breathe nosed, but also slow down the breath. And you could do it even breathing in gently and softly and silently. Breathing in for 3 seconds and breathing out for 3 seconds, which would bring down the respiratory rate to about 10 breaths per minute. Nose slow and low while wearing the mask will help to alleviate any feelings of panic.
Brilliant. So brilliant. Patrick, you've been so generous. And what I really want to say to you is thank you for doing the work that you do.
Sure.
Thank you for taking that risk, you know, having that thought and going with it, because that can be really confronting. I know, because I can relate to it, especially going and setting up when there's no financial backup or anything else. And it's, you know, little old, you know, one human in the corner going, I want to make a change. So I really, really, really acknowledge you for the work that you're doing around the world and making it available to my clients, to me, and to the rest of, you know, the generations that are going to come after us. It's really imperative that we start listening to you and what you have to say. So I would love you to say, where can we find you? And tell us the title of your new book and when it's going to be released, please.
So the title of the new book is called Atomic Focus, and it's being released. We should have the copies now coming tomorrow, or the very latest is Monday. So I'll send you a copy on. And yeah, I enjoyed writing this book because I suppose if I was to say what is the biggest impact of breath work, I really feel it's bringing that stillness and that calmness to the mind. And it's the mind as the filter through which we interpret all of our life's experiences. And yet we never stand back to ask, what is the filter? So, you know, there's so many different aspects to it. And it was I enjoyed writing it. Like, you know, just one of those, it's a very short book. It's colorful. The font is 15 and there's plenty of illustrations in it. Because it was aimed at the person with attention deficit, person with poor concentration. So in terms of the websites, we have a website, Buteyko Clinic. That's for health. That's buteykoclinic.com. And everything is priced in US dollars because our market is outside of Ireland. We have workshops for panic disorder, asthma, sleep disorder, breathing, female breathing children. And then we have another website called oxygenadvantage.com, and that's high performance. So that's stressing the body. We use that with, but then again, there's a lot of information in that as well. So suppose it depends on what people are looking for. Yeah.
Brilliant. Really, really fantastic. Patrick, it has been a joy to speak to you today. Thank you for your time and thank you for sharing on that really imperative and important information. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks very much, Karen.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Talk Healing to Me, Stories for Women with MS. Now, if you want to get some tailored advice on your health that takes into account your lifestyle, your time and your energy and focus, I invite you to go to karendwyer.com and take the quiz. It's super simple. It's 3 minutes. You'll answer about 25 questions. And what you'll get based on your answers is an 18-page report of practical things that you can bring into your life. I would love for you to let me know how you get on, and you can DM me on Instagram at I am Karen Dwyer, or you can email me at hello@karendwyer.com. Let me know your score. And if there's any other ways I can be of support, I would be delighted to do so. Talk to you on the next episode.